This is VIX, a biographical series made possible through a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and produced by Miami University Radio. VIX Beiderbecke, along with Frankie Trombauer and several other musicians, was established at the Arcadia Ballroom in St. Louis. It was September 1925. In place of the formal musical education, which consistently eluded Beiderbecke, the disciplinarian Trombauer began to coach his cornet player in reading music. It was in St. Louis from September 1925 until May 1926 that the pair worked out their facility for playing together. There they began their phenomenal phrase bouncing and developed it well. It was in St. Louis that Bix met the young Ruth Schaffner. Ruth recalls her meeting with Bix.
In the latter part of September 1925, I would say just circumstances at a party. Mutual friend, Carrie Spradling, he was playing at the Arcadia Ballroom. Frank Trombauer, it was his band, and Dior, and Pee Wee Russell, and Bud Hastert, and Marty Livingston. I called him Vic always. I thought he was wonderful. He was very friendly and he had a personality that was just wonderful. He was immaculate, very much a gentleman. We all went to the Arcadia Ballroom practically every night after we met Vic. We'd go someplace after the band had finished playing at the Arcadia to dine and dance. He would call me up and I would go down to the Arcadia and meet him. We often would go to a movie after he finished rehearsal, and then we'd go bowling. And he was very fond of baseball, Roger Hornsby, and the Cardinals.
Ruth lived and worked in St. Louis with her sisters Bess and Stella. Bess remembers the one disruption of their lives which Bix brought.
Yes, I do recall it quite well. We three had been down at the Arcadia Ballroom dancing, as we often did. And this particular night, Stella and I had come on home before Ruth did. And Ruth was getting later and later, and Ruth hadn't come in as yet, and I was terribly worried and couldn't go to sleep. So long, it was 6 o'clock, to be honest about it. A knock on the door, and I got up, and there stood Ruth and Bix coming in. Perfectly all right and everything, but I thought it was a little late, so I had no other alternative than to speak to Bix. Well, truthfully, it was sort of a harsh tone, I think. And I think I slammed the door in his face. And he went on, and I got Ruth in there and saw to it that she went to bed and kind of spanked her a little bit. I was upset, worried. And I knew we had to be up and at the office at 8 o'clock. And this was 6, and so we had no time. And Ruth did lie down for a little while, and I was asleep at the time she had to get up. So I woke her up and insisted that we had a few words, and insisted that she go to work, and I went to work too, but we weren't, neither one of us was able to, hardly to make it, you know, but we did. And so at lunch the next day, I always had Ruth and I always met at the corner of 7th and Olive for lunch. And this particular day we'd planned to go into Famous Bar and have lunch. But all morning I didn't think Ruth would meet me because she was angry, really. I was too. But I gave her the benefit of the doubt and went over there where we usually met, and there she stood. And I was glad to see her because I didn't think she'd be there. And so we went into Famous and had lunch, and that ended the argument there. That was about the end of that.
It was soon forgotten. She loved him.
Oh, I forgave him entirely. Certainly I forgave him. I liked him very much. He was a wonderful person. We all liked him. A lot of fun. Good boy, I thought. He was so good. And everybody liked Dix, it seemed. He, well, like Ruth said, he was a very kindly man. Time meant nothing to Dix. You know, he was a good time boy. He was not too serious about anything, unless it would be his music. He wasn't a serious-minded person, in my estimation. Of course, I could be wrong. And he was a lover of the horn. It had to be right.
In St. Louis, Bix's interest in the piano and in classical music was intense. Across the way from the Arcadia Ballroom was an establishment where Frankie Trombauer and Bix would sit at an old piano in the back room for hours on end. Here they created their style by completing each other's musical ideas. It was in this back room, this rickety piano, which saw the first seeds of Beiderbecke's composition In a Mist. The St. Louis season came to a close in May 1926. Ruth tells about the breakup of the band and shares some of her reactions to Bix.
He stayed here. He was here May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And I was with him those days. And then he left the 6th. He went to Indiana from here to Hudson Lake, Bix, and Dior, and Pee Wee Russell, and Trombauer. He came back to see me. Yeah. He called up on the telephone, and he said, I'll be out to your house in a half an hour. And to get ready, we're going places. Well, he was a perfect gentleman. And very neat in his appearance. And he was not an alcoholic, like some publications have said. And he was a kindly man and had many, many friends. Everybody loved Bix. It's fond memories to talk about him. And my recollections of him will always be with me. Because I was very, very fond of Bix. And we were good friends. Maybe more. Maybe would have been more than good friends had he lived.
Frank Trombauer, the boss, and by now a close friend of Bix, talks of the closing at the Arcadia. And Paul Mertz adds his comments.
At the close of that season, Golcat wanted me to come to Detroit and lead the Golcat Band, the old Gene Golcat Band of Detroit, a very famous organization. And I would take the job on one condition, that Bix go along. Well, they weren't too sure that that was a good idea. So I decided I wouldn't go to Detroit and lead the band unless we could go as a team. Well, there was a long, drawn-out negotiation there, but eventually Bix and I went to Detroit.
Tram and Bix were induced to come to Detroit and join the Golcat Greystone group, which again was split up for the summer. Bix and Tram going to Hudson Lake, Indiana, at that resort, and the rest of the band going to Island Lake again. In the fall, the personnel reassembled at the Greystone Ballroom, and with the addition of the great arranger Bill Chalice, became one of the greatest bands of history. The ensemble was the carburetor, and the spark plug was Bix. And woe to me, I wasn't with that band at that time. Had been shifted to the Book Cadillac Hotel Band since 1925. Itzy Riskin was the pianist.
With the summer season, the members of the Gold Cat troops reformed into three bands to play at resorts near Detroit. Frankie Trombauer again assumed the position of director of one of the groups. Bix and Tram, along with eight others, formed a band to play at Hudson Lake in northeastern Indiana. Weekends at the lake were wild, filled with excursions of pleasure seekers from around Chicago. The Sunday attractions brought musicians from the Windy City, among them Eddie Condon. The Sunday night jam sessions often lasted well into Monday mornings, and Monday was the band's day off. Bix and the group usually traveled the 90 miles into Chicago to continue the musical fun there. On one of these trips to the Windy City, Bix went to hear Husk O'Hare's Wolverines. Beginning with the replacement of Bix by Jimmy McPartland in New York, a succession of changes had occurred in the band's personnel. O'Hare's group had evolved from the original Wolverines band, and Bix praised their style and accomplishments. The cottage on Hudson Lake also formed a backdrop for Bix's further work on In a Mist. The summer was one of hard but pleasant work for the band members. Easygoing Bix and his mentor Tram were called to Detroit in September for more serious work with the Gold Cat Orchestra. The recording date kept by Gold Cat and his men on October 12, 1926, found some changes. The science of sound recording had advanced. With the introduction of electrical recording techniques, the discs had a new dimension. The bass and rhythm sections of a band could be heard in the reproduction. The band which recorded Sunday consisted of Bix, along with Fuzzy Farrar and Ray Ludwig on trumpets, Bill Rank and Spiegel Wilcox on trombones, Doc Riker, Tram, and Don Murray on saxophones, Joe Venuti on violin, Izzy Riskin on piano, Steve Brown on string bass, Eddie Lang on guitar, Howdy Quicksell on banjo, and Chauncey Morehouse on drums. Frank Powers evaluates the recording Sunday.
The Gold Cat Band is without a doubt the most important white dance orchestra of that period, and their contributions to jazz music are legendary. Just for instance, the solos the band had, Frank Trombauer, the great C melody saxophone player, the great violin of Joe Venuti, and the equally advanced guitar of Eddie Lang. The Dorsey brothers, excellent trombone, also Bill Rank, and several others. Fuzzy Farrar, actually a second trumpet player, was among the better performers at that time. In addition to that, they had the services of two of the most exciting arrangers of that period, that being Tom Satterfield and Bill Chalice. Here we hear a number arranged by Bill Chalice, the pop tune Sunday. In this particular instance, in addition to some of the fine solos already mentioned, you hear the marvelous trumpet section chorus arranged by Bill Chalice and, according to Pee Wee Russell, based upon a cornet solo played by Bix Beiderbecke. Naturally, Bix leads the section.
On January 31st, 1927, the Goldkette Band recorded I'm Gonna Meet My Sweetie Now. The only personnel change from Sunday was Danny Polo replacing Don Murray on saxophone.
Typifying the period, Victor put the ringer in on the studio, that is to say, something to make the record sell. A very dated vocal chorus by a group of people humorously known as Keller, Sister, and Lynch. Heard on the recording of the Bill Rank and the excellent clarinet again of Don Murray. Later, the Goldkette Band had the opportunity to make a very limited number of sides in which the jazz talents of the musicians were to get a little bit better play. One of these is I'm Gonna Meet My Sweetie Now. Curiously enough, it does not have a chorus by Bix. However, it does have choruses by many of the other stars in the band, and the spirit of Bix pervades the thing completely. Again, this is a Bill Chalice arrangement. I'm Gonna Meet My Sweetie Now. Thank you.
The next day found the Gold Cat Orchestra again in a New York studio, this time to cut My Pretty Girl.
One of the things that recording is notable for is the delightfully scintillating quality of the rhythm section. In this day and age when rhythm sections are oftentimes mean different things to other people, it is interesting to compare this rhythm section to what other white bands of that period were playing. It becomes readily understandable that this band, upon playing New York, according to Rex Stewart, a very fine Negro trumpet player, carved the Fletcher Henderson band of that period with its great stars such as Coleman Hawkins, Charlie Green, Joe Smith. In any case, the quality of rhythm section in this recording is outstanding. Also outstanding, part of the reason for that rhythm section, of course, is Steve Brown, a bass player originally from the New Orleans Rhythm Kings, that plays the marvelous slap bass accompaniments, in this case behind Joe Venuti. Danny Polo is probably the clarinetist, having replaced Murray at that time. The Victory Recording Company seemed to have given the band more freedom for the My Pretty Girl date than any other single recording the band made. First of all, they probably didn't direct the Gold Cat Band to make this particular recording, and the band probably wanted to do it. The tune was written by a fellow named Charlie Fulcher, who was a band leader from Atlanta, Georgia. The boys had started playing that is Bix and a certain bunch of the Gold Cat Band. At the time, Bix was farmed out to Hudson Lake, Indiana, before joining the main band in 26. Legend has it that this is a head arrangement, although the credits are generally given to Bill Challis for this one also. Here we hear the dominating feature of the fine string bass of Steve Brown once more. We hear Frank Drumbauer and again Joe Venuti, and another marvelous brass section passage with Bix leading. Thank you.
Bill Rank, who was part of both recording sessions, played trombone for Goldcat. Here, he recreates an image of some of the clowning among the members of the band.
The clowns we had in the band were Jimmy Dorsey and Don Murray. They were the clowns. One instance that I think I can relate, we were on the train making a trip someplace, I forget where it was. Bix was asleep, and Jimmy Dorsey and Don Murray, they all got the idea they're going to make up Bix's face with burnt cork. And when Bix went to sleep, Bix was asleep, and he didn't wake up. He was the hardest man in the world to wake up. So they put a mustache on him and big round dots on his cheeks, and one on his chin, one on his forehead. So when we got off at this little town, the hotel was only about a block away. So we're walking up the street. We didn't even take a cab because it's such a short distance. So there were a couple of cab drivers there by the station, and they started to laugh, looking at Bix and one pointing. So Bix looked over at him and says, "Well, you're not so good looking yourself." Totally oblivious of what he looked like. So when he checked into the hotel and got a look at himself in the mirror, then he knew what they were laughing about. That night, we had to take a cab to go to the place we were going to play. Well, I can't relate the names that he blurted out with, but he called everybody, and whoever was responsible, and he didn't know who, he called them all kinds of names, and we all laughed. It was a big joke to us. We didn't take it seriously at all. That is the name calling. But he was mad. That's only one of the, I think it was about the only time I've ever seen Bix mad or angry. He was real upset about it.
Bix was accepted wholeheartedly into the commercial Goldcat Orchestra. It was the beginning of his recording career with musicians of class. This is Bix, a biographical series made possible through a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Consultants for the series were John Steiner, along with Joseph Campbell and Philip Evans. Commentary was recorded by Frank Powers. Continuity was written by Mary Kay Fulton. Audio engineer, Michael J. McGuire. Bix was researched, produced, and directed by Jim Grover. This is Bill Utter speaking for Miami University Radio.
Limited rights for this rebroadcast of Bix on WMKV 89.3 FM Cincinnati were given by WMUB FM, Miami University Broadcasting in Oxford, Ohio, courtesy of WMUB FM General Manager Cleve Callison. WMUB FM originally produced the program for broadcast in 1971. Any rebroadcast, internet streaming, or archiving of this program by anyone other than WMKV is prohibited. WMKV would like to thank the original producer of the program, Jim Grover, for his vision and efforts to preserve this unique chapter in the history of jazz, authored by Bix, and Mr. Bill Utter, Director Emeritus of Miami University Broadcasting, who conceived the original program idea, narrated the original series, and has been instrumental in making this rebroadcast possible. Dave Bartholomew, volunteer and host of the WMKV weekly program Friction, deserves special thanks for his labor of love in remastering Bix. The advisory group that oversaw the project to rebroadcast Bix include Frank Powers, commentator on the original series, Dave Bartholomew, Bill Utter, Cleve Collison, WMUB General Manager, Dave Schramm, WMKV Coordinator of Online Services, Mike Farrar, WMKV Coordinator of Production Services, Joe Schooner, WMKV Intern from the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music, Media Division, and Alan Bayosky, WMKV General Manager. Please stay tuned for the best in big band era music right here on WMKV, the way radio was meant to be.